Hey Boo, we're continuing chapter 20 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Dumbledore had just taken out his first memory. He says, "And now it is time to hear from Hokey the House Elf, who worked for a very old, very rich witch by the name of Hepzibah Smith." Dumbledore tapped a bottle with his wand, and the cork flew out, and he tipped the swirling memory into the pensive, saying as he did so, "After you, Harry." Harry got to his feet and bent once more over the rippling silver contents of the stone basin until his face touched them. He tumbled through the dark nothingness and landed in a sitting room in front of an immensely fat old lady, wearing an elaborate ginger wig and a brilliant pink set of ropes that flowed all around her, giving her the look of a melting ice cake. She was looking into a small jeweled mirror and dabbing rouge into her already scarlet cheeks with a large powder puff, while the tiniest and oldest house elf Harry had ever seen laced her fleshy feet into tight satin slippers. "Hurry up, Hokey," said Hepzibah imperiously. "He said he'd come at 4. It's only a couple minutes to, and he's never been late yet." She tucked away her powder puff as the house elf straightened up. The top of the elf's head barely reached the seat of Hepzibah's chair, and her papery skin hung off her frame just like the crisp linen sheet she wore draped like a toga. "How do I look?" said Hepzibah, turning her head to admire the various angles of her face in the mirror. "Lovely, madam," squeaked Hokey. Harry could only assume that it was down in Hokey's contract that she must lie through her teeth when asked this question, because Hepzibah looked a long way from lovely in his opinion. A tinkling doorbell rang, and both mistress and elf jumped. "Quick, quick, he's here, Hokey," cried Hepzibah, and the elf scurried out of the room, which was so crammed with objects it was difficult to see how anybody could navigate their way across it without knocking over at least a dozen things. There were cabinets full of little lacquered boxes, cases full of gold-embossed books, shelves of orbs and celestial globes, and many flourishing potted plants in brass containers. In fact, the room looked like a cross between a magical antique shop and a conservatory. The house elf returned within minutes, followed by a tall young man Harry had no difficulty whatsoever in recognizing as Voldemort. He was plainly dressed in a black suit. His hair was a little longer than it had been at school, and his cheeks were hollowed. But all of this suited him. He looked more handsome than ever. He picked his way through the cramped room with an air that showed how many times he had visited before, and bowed low over Hepzibah's fat little hand, brushing it with his lips. "I brought you flowers," he said quietly, producing a bunch of roses from nowhere. "You naughty boy, you shouldn't have," squealed Hepzibah, though Harry noticed that she had an empty vase standing ready on the nearest little table. "You do spoil this old lady, Tom. Sit down, sit down. Where's Hokey?" "Ah." The house elf had come dashing back into the room carrying a tray of little cakes, which she set at her mistress's elbow. "Help yourself, Tom," said Hepzibah. "I know how you love my cakes. Now, how are you? You look pale. They overwork you at that shop. I've said it 100 times. Voldemort smiled mechanically, and Hepzibah simpered. "Well, what's your excuse for visiting this time?" she asked, batting her lashes. "Mr. Burke would like to make an improved offer for the goblin-made armor," said Voldemort. 500 galleons. He feels it is more than fair." "Now, now, not so fast, or I think you're only here for my trinkets," pouted Hepzibah. "I am ordered here because of them," said Voldemort quietly. "I'm only a poor assistant, madam, who must do as he is told. Mr. Burke wishes me to inquire." "Oh, Mr. Burke, phooey," said Hepzibah, waving a little hand. "I have something to show you that I've never shown Mr. Burke. Can you keep a secret, Tom? Will you promise you won't tell Mr. Burke I've got it? He'd never let me rest if he knew I'd shown it to you. And I'm not selling, not to Burke, not to anybody. But you, Tom, you'll appreciate it for its history, not how many galleons you can get for it." "I'll be glad to see anything Miss Hepzibah shows me," said Voldemort quietly, and Hepzibah gave another girlish giggle. "I had Hokey bring it out for me. Hokey, where are you? I want to show Mr. Riddle our finest treasure. In fact, bring both while you're at it." "Here, madam," squeaked the house elf, and Harry saw two leather boxes, one on top of the other, moving across the room, as if on their own volition, though he knew the tiny elf was holding them over her head as she wended her way between tables, poofs, and footstools. "Now," said Hepzibah happily, taking the boxes from the elf, laying them in her lap, and preparing to open the topmost one. "I think you'll like this, Tom. Oh, if my family knew I was showing this to you, they can't wait to get their hands on this." She opened the lid. Harry edged forward a little to get a better view, and saw what looked like a small golden cup with two finely wrought handles. "I wonder if you know what this is, Tom. Pick it up, have a good look," whispered Hepzibah, and Voldemort stretched out a long-fingered hand and lifted the cup by one handle out of its snug silken wrappings. Harry thought he saw a red gleam in his dark eyes. His greedy expression was curiously mirrored on Hepzibah's face, except that her tiny eyes were fixed upon Voldemort's handsome features. "A badger," murmured Voldemort, examining the engraving upon the cup. "Then this was Helga Hufflepuff's, as you know very well, you clever boy," said Hepzibah, leaning forward with a loud creaking of corsets and actually pinching his hollow cheek. "Didn't I tell you I was distantly descended? This has been handed down in the family for years and years. Lovely, isn't it? And all sorts of powers it's supposed to possess, too, but I haven't tested them, though. I just keep it nice and safe in here." She hooked the cup back off Voldemort's long forefinger and restored it gently to its box, too intent upon settling it carefully back into the position to notice the shadow that had crossed Voldemort's face as the cup was taken away. "Now then," said Hepzibah happily, "where's Hokey? Oh, yes, Hokey, there you are. Take that away now." The elf obediently took the boxed cup, and Hepzibah turned her attention to the much flatter box in her lap. "I think you'll like this even more, Tom," she whispered. "Lean in a little, dear boy, so you can see. Of course, Burke knows I've got this one. I brought it back from him. I bought it from him, and I dare say he'd love to get it back when I'm gone." She slid back the fine filigree clasp and flipped open the box. There upon the smooth crimson velvet lay a heavy golden locket. Voldemort reached out his hand without invitation this time and held it up to the light, staring at it. "Slytherin's mark," he said quietly, as the light played upon the ornate serpentine S. "That's right," said Hepzibah, delighted, apparently, at the sight of Voldemort gazing at her locket, transfixed. "I had to pay an arm and a leg for it, but I couldn't let it pass, not a real treasure like that. Had to have it for my collection. Burke bought it, apparently, from a ragged-looking woman who seemed to have stolen it, but had no idea of its true value." There was no mistaking it this time. Voldemort's eyes flashed scarlet at the words, and Harry saw his knuckles whiten on the locket's chain. "I dare say Burke paid her a pittance, but there you are. Pretty, isn't it? And again, all kinds of powers attributed to it, though I just keep it nice and safe." She reached out to take the locket back. For a moment, Harry thought Voldemort was not going to let go of it, but then it had slid through his fingers and was back in its red velvet cushion. "So there you are, Tom, dear, and I hope you enjoyed that." She looked him full in the face, and for the first time, Harry saw her foolish smile falter. "Are you all right, dear?" "Oh, yes," said Voldemort quietly. "Yes, I'm very well. I thought about a trick of the light, I suppose," said Hepzibah, looking unnerved, and Harry guessed that she, too, had seen the momentary red gleam in Voldemort's eye. "Here, Hokey, take these away and lock them up again, the usual enchantments." "Time to leave, Harry," said Dumbledore quietly, as the little elf bobbed up away, bearing the boxes, and Dumbledore grasped Harry once again above the elbow, and together they rose up through oblivion and back to Dumbledore's office. "Hepzibah Smith died 2 days after that little scene," said Dumbledore, resuming his seat and indicating Harry should do the same. "Hokey, the house elf, was convicted by the Ministry of poisoning her mistress's evening cocoa by accident." "No way," said Harry angrily. "I see we are of one mind," said Dumbledore. "Certainly there are many similarities between this death and that of the Riddles. In both cases, someone else took the blame, someone who had a clear memory of having caused the death." "Hokey confessed?" "She remembered putting something in her mistress's cocoa that turned out not to be sugar, but a lethal and little-known poison," said Dumbledore. It was concluded that she had not meant to do it, but being old and confused. Voldemort modified her memory, just like he did with Morphin. Yes, that is my conclusion too, said Dumbledore. And as with Morphin, the Ministry was predisposed to suspect Hokey. Because she was a house elf, said Harry. He had rarely felt more in sympathy with the society Hermione had set up, S-P-E-W. Precisely, said Dumbledore. She was old, she admitted to having tampered with the drink, and nobody at the Ministry bothered to inquire further. And, as in the case with Morphin, by the time I traced her and managed to extract this memory, her life was almost over. But her memory, of course, proves nothing except that Voldemort knew of the existence of the cup and the locket. By the time Hokey was convicted, Hepzibah's family had realized that two of her greatest treasures were missing. It took them a while to be sure of this, for she had many hiding places, having always guarded her collection most jealously. But before they were sure beyond doubt that the cup and the locket were both gone, the assistant who worked at Borgin and Burke's, the young man who had visited Hepzibah so regularly and charmed her so well, had resigned his post and vanished. His superiors had no idea where he had gone. They were surprised as anyone at his disappearance. And that was the last that anybody had seen or heard of Tom Riddle for a very long time. I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that beautiful kitten, Boo. And now it's bedtime for the pup and the kitten. Sweet dreams, darling. I love you. Good night.